All of our worlds were shaken this week when 176 people were killed on that Ukrainian International Airlines flight, shot down shortly after takeoff in Iran by a missile strike that was a mistake. Devastating for friends and family, chilling for nervous flyers already haunted by plane crashes, like one a decade ago in Libya in which just one young Dutch boy survived. That story stayed with author Anne Napolitano. She wondered, how strong is the human spirit? How much do we count on people like that little boy to demonstrate that for us, to live? It inspired her to write a fictionalized version of a crash with a 12-year-old boy named Eddie who loses his parents and a beloved brother on a crash of a flight to L.A., and as the only survivor, he gains the beautiful and burdensome hopes and dreams of the families of those who died. Anne weaves together those two narratives, survivor Edward's struggle to figure out, why me? And back in time, those doomed passengers as they fly toward their fate, a war vet, a young woman who finds out on the flight she's pregnant. Dear Edward is getting early raves. Author Anne Napolitano joins us from New York. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
Take us back. What was that terrible crash that so obsessed you?
It was in 2010. It was a flight from South Africa bound for London, and it crashed in Libya. And there was only one survivor. It was a 9-year-old Dutch boy named Ruben van Assau. And basically his seat was found about a half mile away from the rest of the wreckage, and he was still buckled in, and he had a punctured lung and a broken leg, but he was otherwise fine. Mm. And his brother and his parents had been on the flight, and everyone else had died immediately. Mm. And I could not read enough about this story. I had two little boys at the time, a 1-year-old and a 3-year-old, and there was a photo of Ruben in the hospital, and he was so beautiful and broken and yet alive and okay that I felt like I needed to make a world in which he could walk forward and have a life in which something like that, if it had happened to one of my boys, that I could imagine a future for them.
Well, that's what you say in the afterword, that it was also inspired by thinking of your own two boys. And, you know, we think of family and what would this be like? But a lot of people can't go toward that thought. You know, they want to stay as far away from it as possible. Here you spend years making yourself think, what would this be like? What was that like?
I think it's a preoccupation with like what your worst nightmare would be and then finding a way to make it okay. So it was trying to create a world that was so imbued with kindness that there was a way for this boy to find a way forward.
Mm-hmm. And we don't want to give away too many of the plot twists, but let's just give a little of the narrative. He's a New York City kid, homeschooled by his dad along with his brother Jordan, who he adores, his older, slightly cooler brother. Plays the piano, shy. Suddenly he's in a hospital bed and people are asking him, how are you doing? And you write, Edward is unable to answer any of these questions. He can't consider how he's feeling. That door is far too dangerous to open. Did you do research? Because after reading your book, I did, you know, Google around, and there are articles about sole survivors. There's one, George Lamson Jr. in 1985, the only one to survive a crash that killed 71 in Reno, Nevada. Did you research what survivors go through?
Yes. I'm a nervous flyer. I never thought that I would write a book about a plane crash. So I had to do an extensive amount of research. I spoke to a pilot. I did a lot of reading. I read National Transportation Safety Board transcripts, which is the national organization that after every major tragedy, they publish a document that says basically what the issue was, what went wrong. I read and talked to as many people as I could because I was coming from a place of very little knowledge. And also, I wanted it to feel true. I didn't want to sensationalize the crash. I wanted it to have the weight that it actually has in the people's lives who lose someone and the people who are on the plane themselves.
You take us through this terrible cascade of mistakes that leads to the crash. But back to Eddie. Eddie becomes Edward. It's as if almost Eddie has died with his whole family. He's adopted by his aunt and uncle, who have their own pain. His aunt, of course, lost her sister, Eddie's mother, but she's also been trying to have children, not successfully. His uncle becomes obsessed with researching the crash. Along the way, when they're first trying to keep him away from the public that's so fascinated with him, he sort of gets treated a little bit like a hotel guest. Did you research that as well, that how people don't know how, people don't know what to do?
Well, I did read a lot about sole survivors, but more it was coming from a place of even if your spouse dies and you enter a room, people do not know what to say to you. And this was magnified times a million. And he was a child as well, so the adults couldn't even begin to understand where he might be. And so they're so careful around him. And that leaves the importance of there's a girl who lives next door named Shay, who's his age. And he ends up sleeping on her floor because he needs to be by another kid because he misses his brother so much. Mm. And he also because she treats him like a normal person because she's a child herself.
At one point, he just can't go to a hearing in Washington, D.C. about the plane crash. And she says, well, no one there can hurt you. I mean, you already lost everything, right? You know, like,
she speaks the truth to him, whereas the grown-ups are more withholding.
He also has, in addition to the guilt, and we'll talk about that, he has PTSD when he's forced to go to gym class and play basketball. People bumping into him, it's like a plane crash all over again. I mean, he has a physical response.
Yes. When he's in the hospital after the crash, one of the doctors says to the aunt and uncle that the effects could last for years, and it could affect his smell, his balance, his understanding of the world around him. You just don't know when the symptoms were going to hit and how they were going to hit. And really, he's 12 when the plane crashes, and when the book ends, he's 18. And it takes that long of all these tiny steps, both forward and backward, of him trying to make his way to a world where he feels connected again and where he's able to love again and able to accept love, because it's not a quick process. No. I mean, it just wouldn't be.
It's years. I mean, we watch him grow taller and taller and taller, and he's still wrestling with this. You know, just another moment with Shay, because she's so blunt. She says to, now, Edward, he shouldn't worry about taking another flight because he's already crashed, and it's statistically impossible for him to crash twice. And you write, Edward barely registers what she said. He's been sucker-punched in that moment by memories of his brother. And he knows he has to ride the memories out. The only way out of it is through it. So he sees Jordan beside him on the plane, knows that the smallest, truest reason he will never fly again is that the last airplane seat he ever sits in has to be the one beside his brother. That, you know, brings us to this guilt he feels, this, like, why me? Obviously another consequence of, you know, being a survivor.
Yeah, and he's the younger brother, too. So, of course, as his therapist points out to him, his brother was 15 and he was 12. And 15-year-olds have more developed personality than 12-year-olds do. And so Eddie, along with missing his brother with every fiber of his being, also feels that his brother had more to offer than he does. So he has to work through both emotions throughout the book.
And in all the research we did, you probably found the same thing. The one way to get through is to do something for someone else. And we're not going to give it away, but he sure does. But in the meantime, there are a couple sidebars here. People who just want to make him something he's not. He's just a kid. When he leaves the hospital, for instance, there's a mob scene. So many eyes stare at Edward, the scene looks like a Picasso painting. Hundreds of eyeballs, and then a smattering of limbs and hairstyles. He realizes he's famous. You've written that you were fascinated by the social media part of this.
Yes, in 2010, it actually was the first time that social media had become kind of what we understand it to be today. So when that crash happened, the real crash, there were young girls who had posted pages for Reuben with pictures of him and talking about how devastated they were and how they hoped he was okay. It wasn't just the journalists reporting. It was everyone. I mean, I think people were looking for connection. Yeah. And they're looking for meaning, and so they were trying to put that on Edward, which is an inappropriate place to put it since he was a young boy who had just lost everything.
It would be inappropriate to put it on anybody. Nobody can be who the families of the victims want them to be. And you have a great response. I won't say which character tells Eddie this, but at one point someone says, oh, you're nothing special. There's absolutely no reason why you survived this. And it's such a relief.
Yeah, it's a huge gift.
Yeah. How about for you, Anne Napolitano? Did you lose some of your fear of flying?
No, I probably am about the same. I'm still a nervous flyer. I think that I have a greater appreciation for how amazing it is that we can launch these giant buses up into the air and fly where we want to go. I think that is truly awesome. But I also look around at the passengers around me and wonder what their stories are. I feel like I'm aware of connections everywhere I go, and in the air, certainly no exception.
That's so interesting, because that's what I did.
Every time
I met a new character while I was reading your book while flying, I would look around and think to myself, I should look at all these people around me. You know, we're in this together, and let's see them. Let's see them. Anne Napolitano, editor of One Story Magazine. Her new book, Dear Edward, it's really quite something. And thank you so much for talking to us about it.
Thank you so much.